Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cheap for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, welcome to Cheap for Yourself. It's great to have you with us wherever you happen to be in the world today. It is a crazy world at that. Just about every story you hear about or read about in the news is about or has a connection to the pandemic. It's keeping everyone at a distance from each other. But there is another story that's been pushed out of the headlines, though it refuses to go away, and that problem is addiction. Millions struggle with their addiction, and the damage toll to society is in the billions every year. Our guest today is Billy Manis. He's a recovering addict, blogger, motivational speaker, musician, and dad to three daughters. Billy Manis, also the author of Kick-Ass Recovery, From Your First Year Clean to the Life of Your Dreams. Your book really shows us how you were able to work through your addiction and realize your dreams. It's a great story. And I guess you didn't have the best home life either. Your parents weren't exactly supportive. I think nuts was the word that came into play.
That's about right.
Was anyone in your environment supportive?
I had friends growing up, just as eccentric as myself, other artists, other musicians that, it was like us against the world. So I had that, but, you know, not much in the way of mentorship.
I know how tough, well, obviously growing up by itself can be tough, but when you have dreams and you're thinking about them, maybe even talking about them, that can present some problems too. I was 8 years old when I realized what I wanted to do with my life. What kind of dreams did you have as a kid?
I wanted to be a rock star.
Of course.
That was since I was a child. That was it.
Well, of course, you are a musician, so you're still playing?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Not many gigs these days. They all got canceled.
There's a section in the book that asks, why were you getting high in the first place? What do you see as your main reason?
My main reason, I think, is like a lot of people's reasons. It's a balm for childhood trauma most of the time.
Yeah. And you, I don't want to call this old school, but it is kind of old school. You've dealt with what used to be known as a dealer. Right? I mean, that was your main access to drugs at first. Was dealing. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't opioids or anything like that, like we're seeing today. It wasn't prescription drugs that you find around the house or that you had prescribed to you. Did those ever come into play?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't very discerning about what I was putting in my body.
Uh-huh.
If it could change my mood or my mind, if it was a mood or mind altering substance, any kind whatsoever, it was game.
I like that you write about the importance of doing the inner work. And with all the drug craziness in your life, you still had a sense of direction. But what do you say to addicts who tell you, I have no idea what I want to do with my life?
Yeah, I addressed that in one of my chapters with Finding Your Calling, where I, you know, a lot of times if you don't know exactly what you were meant to do, or, you know, I've heard this from people before where it's like, I don't know what I'm here for. I can't figure out why I'm here or what my, you know, purpose is. I do give certain exercises that help people kind of hone in on that. Anything from like using your envy, which is like, going deep into yourself and think about the things that make you envious about others. So if you see, for instance, you see somebody playing guitar, you see somebody playing piano and singing in a bar, and you think to yourself, man, I wish that was me. I guess the whole purpose of my book is to say that can be you.
Hmm. Now that's, I guess, the what, and there's a section in the book called Name Your Why. What are we saying when we say our why?
Why? Why do you want to live a better life? Why do you want to live a life of your dreams? What is it that's driving you toward that? For me, in the book, obviously it was wanting to be a father to my children, wanting to be a responsible father to my children.
Now, do your kids, are they, do they know about your past, or do they know much about your past?
My 19-year-old, of course, knows. My two little ones, no, they're not old enough to understand that yet.
You speak to addicts in jails and at churches. What are some of the talking points you take with you that you stress in these talks?
It all began when I would go into the county jail, and I think by the standards of the 12-step program, I was supposed to go in there and speak about the 12-step program. A lot of times I would just improvise and riff all on my own, and because I could kind of feel what was happening in the room and what was getting the people interested and what was getting the guys interested, and it all began by telling my story, and then I told how I went from, you know, being a $300 a week cab driver to an $1,100 a week truck driver, and I noticed such a positive response that I just honed that story, and I got it. It became my story that I would tell, and it always left people with inspiration and happiness and thoughts for the future.
Now, when they talk to you, are you seeing a kind of a common thread? Are there some things that they're saying that are pretty common?
I noticed that a lot of the time when I'm packing up my stuff and getting ready to leave, they'll stand there waiting to talk to me, and they want to know. I mean, it's what inspired me to write the book, because they want to know the mechanics of how I did what I did. They don't just want to know, you know, the overall inspiring story. How do I get out of this jail in 2 weeks from now when I get out and do what you did? And so that's where, you know, that's where that came from.
Yeah. And the book is a really great example of that, of the steps taken. Your program, as I see it, is one of action. It's not theory, you know what I mean? It's not just stories. It's taking action. And, man, I could talk about this for days, but you seem to follow universal law and how actions will affect thoughts, affect your results. How important is that to you? I know you've talked about things like law of attraction, but you seem to really live it.
Yes, a lot of it can be hokey. I understand that a lot of people are a little bit put off by it, because there's this part in the movie The Secret where they say, you know, if you could just imagine your hands around that steering wheel of that Ferrari, soon that Ferrari is going to be your... Okay, so we know that that's a little bit over the top. However, in this very room, I had a vision board over there, and I would do my exercises in the morning, and I would stare at that vision board, and I would see that book. I would see that book on the shelf in Barnes & Noble, and I was getting rejection letter after rejection letter after rejection letter. Every morning, I would look at that vision board, and I would imagine that book on the shelf. I would go to Barnes & Noble into the self-help section, and I would just imagine my book there. It's there now. Well, I mean, if you can get in there, you know.
Yeah, true. it works if you work it. What is the problem with The Secret? Because I get a lot of pushback about that. Oh, I tried that. I read that. I listened to the CDs. Nothing happened. And people, I think, are treating it like a magic lamp.
Yeah, well, here's a quick little story about that. I couldn't even find an agent, first of all. And I had gotten so many rejections from agents that I could tell at one point that it was getting into my subconscious. It was starting to, the incessant hope that I felt was starting to wane a little bit. And I knew a hypnotist up in Woodstock, and I had a paid personal day left. So I took the paid personal day. I went up to see him, and I said, you got to help me. I'm losing my confidence, and I just keep getting rejected. And I know, you know, in other words, you cannot stop even when you are sure you are barking up the wrong tree and it's not going to happen. You just have to, you got to get right up to that point and then go a little bit further. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you get what you're looking for.
John's guest on this Chief for Yourself is Billy Manis, author of Kick-Ass Recovery.
I know gratitude is an important part of what we do on this show, and you discuss gratitude in Kick-Ass Recovery. Thank you for that. How important is gratitude in the overall recovery process?
Oh, it's extraordinarily important in recovery, and it's extraordinarily important in life in general. I was just talking about this the other day with a woman friend of mine. There's an expression, grateful addicts don't use. And that's an important expression. I thought it was just some platitude when I first got in the program, and you know, and I just kind of, you know, shuffed it off a little bit. It's true. If the people who wind up relapsing and using most of the time have lost sight of, you know, what it's the freedom of not having to use, the freedom of not living a life where you're using against your own will every day. If you lose sight of that, of the joy of that, you will go back out and use.
Yeah, that makes sense. You write openly about your dealings with women, and you say you love sex. Was sex an addiction for you too?
I don't think necessarily that I had a sex addiction. I think I had a relationship addiction. You know, I would go from one to the next to the next to the next. Yeah. But I mean, if you take the bigger picture view of all of that, what it really comes down to is I was always looking for something to fill the void, whether it's, you know, relationships or drugs or just whatever I could use to fill that void, because it takes energy to do it without any of those, you know, external sources.
The 12-step program, we talked about that just a minute ago, and so many people who've gone through it give it all of the credit. You have some issues, I think, with 12-step. Talk about where you differ with the program.
Okay. Well, essentially, I love the 12-step program, and I would not, I probably would not be alive without it. So I'll start with that caveat. But I'll say, what we're dealing with right now is a little bit different with the opioid crisis. It's a little bit different than things were 15 years ago or 10 years ago. People are dying in droves at this point. We can't the whole 12-step philosophy is abstinence, and a lot of these people who are dying right now could have been saved if they were allowed to pursue a course of medication-assisted treatment. It's called MAT. Some sort of medication that will help them from going out and using, whether it's, you know, Suboxone or Methadone or whatever. That's very against the 12-step program. But I believe it saves lives, and in certain instances, I think it's essential that we open up ourselves to that possibility for people.
Mm-hmm. I was in an adult children of alcoholics group, and to me, you know, there was a lot of sharing and a lot of good stuff, but I didn't feel like there was enough reason, I guess, to take action. And again, I'm going back to that word action. There's a tendency too that I found to give this up, to give up the problem to, let's say, a higher power. And I'm thinking, well, okay, if I give it up and I admit to being this creature of with no hope, then I'm really, I don't know, am I really making progress? How do you feel about higher powers, and what do you think about a concept like God?
I think that my concept behind God is once it becomes something that I'm to wrap my head around, it's no longer God. So to me, it's this entity that I don't even really understand. I don't think I'll ever understand, but I'm comfortable with not totally. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll refer to it as the universe, you know, whatever feels comfortable when I'm in a conversation about this sort of thing. There is something that exists. I am sure there is something that exists. I just, like I said, when it becomes something that you can put in a box or give a white beard and a cane to, it no longer has the power of what it's supposed to be.
Right. And you've said change your thoughts, change your life. And I think of people like Bruce Lipton and Dr. Joe Dispenza and Tony Robbins, mm-hmm. who had a great influence on you. What would you take away from all of the Tony Robbins influence?
Jeez, I mean, he was like an antidepressant for me for many years. I mean, I remember telling somebody once that there were times during the struggling initial years of my recovery where I would just put his stuff on, and I had heard it 150 times already. But just the tone of the voice and the something that was coming out of those speakers was making it so that I could function during the toughest period of my recovery and of my life. It's an esoteric thing that I can't really explain, but something about those theories and those principles that made me feel like I had a shot in life.
And Tony Robbins is, I guess, kind of a tough love guy. He's kind of in your face. You used a life coach. Was your life coach the same way?
She was a Tony Robbins life coach.
Oh, take that. Oh, geez. These virtual meetings, I don't know if you've had contact with a lot of the people to discuss their effect. Are they the future? I mean, are they going to be effective? Are they going to cause more problems?
That is a really, really good question. It's been very useful to me because I have a very busy schedule, extraordinarily busy schedule. My work life is 12 to 13 hours a day, 5 days a week, and then I have children on the weekends. And when I drop off the children, a lot of the time I was playing gigs. It was very difficult for me to get to meetings. Now I can wake up in the morning feeling a little and turn on my Zoom program and be at the meeting. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I could listen to somebody sharing, and if I needed to, I could share myself. That's beautiful, and I love that. Like I said, there's an X factor that's missing, and it leaves you feeling a little bit off.
Yeah, I guess it is what they call, and I really don't like this phrase, but the new normal. So I guess you get tired of hearing that 1,000 times a day. The conditions that we're seeing now, job prospects are thin, people laid off all over the place. That's got to kick up the addiction numbers, no?
Yes. I do believe that it's starting to exacerbate the problem a little bit right now.
Yeah. And as far as counseling, are you okay with the garden variety counseling? You know what I mean? Are there some things that counselors could do? I'm talking about, I don't mean like the high school guidance counselor types, but I'm also not talking about the Tony Robbins types, just someone who passes him or herself off as a counselor. What would you like to add? What, you know, would be...
You mean like a drug counselor?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's something important there. I mean, those people are trained usually to help the average person struggling with addiction to look at areas that they don't generally look at. Mm. And by observing these things and by working them out with somebody like a counselor, it helps to open up certain, you know, it helps to alleviate certain problems by looking at why certain behaviors take place in a person's life.
Now you've relapsed. You talked about that in the book. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you?
Jeez. It was awful. It was really awful because my body kept using drugs, and every time I got high, I'm not even exaggerating. Every time I got high, this was every single day, the initial reaction was burning in my throat and burning under my eyes. And I felt like I was just going to start crying hysterically every single time. And I couldn't understand what was going on. In retrospect, I knew too much for it to be fun anymore. So I was using against my will, and it was killing me emotionally and spiritually.
Yeah, because like you wrote in the book, it starts out as fun, and very quickly it becomes anything but. One last question, I'll let you go. If you were talking to someone who's really having problems and wants to clean up his life, what one thing would you say, first thing you would say to him right now to hopefully get him on his or her way?
Try to picture yourself not having to use for one day. And you know, meditate on that for a minute and then take it from there.
Visualization and meditation. Do you have a practice, by the way? Do you have a regular meditation practice?
I wouldn't be able to be as serene without it.
Your website is billymanas.com. That's M-A-N-A-S. The book is Kick-Ass Recovery, From Your First Year Clean to the Life of Your Dreams, from our guest, Billy Manas. Billy, thanks for everything you're doing to help addicts with their struggles. The book is a great life story, and it shows how holding on to your dreams can guide us through even great personal challenges. I'll be following your work, and I hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
Thanks, John.
I'll put a link to Billy's website at sheforyourself.com. Make sure you're subscribed to Genuline to get all the posts when you put your email address into that little box at the top of the page, and you'll be kept up to date. That is it for today. Thank you very much for being with us. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.